The Pilgrims from Paradise podcast will begin in just a moment. But first, if you'd like to meet Matthew Gallatin and are in the Pittsburgh area, Matthew will be speaking on the subject of How to Experience God on October 8th at 7 p.m. at St. Nicholas Orthodox Church in McKees Rock, Pennsylvania, only 3 minutes from downtown Pittsburgh. For more information, go to stnicholas-oca.org. Now, here's Pilgrims from Paradise.
You're connected to the Pilgrims from Paradise podcast with author and speaker Matthew Gallatin. Matthew is author of Thirsting for God in the Land of Shallow Wells, published by Conciliar Press. He's a former professor of philosophy and lives in northern Idaho. Here's Matthew.
In Matthew 25, Jesus describes the eternal fate of the unrighteous. They will be consigned, the scripture says, to everlasting punishment, cast into the everlasting fire that has been prepared for the devil and his angels. It's Matthew 25, verses 46 and verse 41. What makes this scriptural passage particularly sobering is the standard of judgment by which the righteous and the wicked shall be separated and their eternal destinies settled. Apparently, one doesn't have to commit foul, heinous crimes to end up in hell. One doesn't have to be a murderer or an abuser, a terrible liar or an adulterer. One just has to fail to give food to the hungry, or drink to the thirsting, or shelter to the stranger, or comfort to the sick and imprisoned, as we are reminded in Matthew 25, verses 41 through 43. The message here is that in order to be with God, one must be unselfish like God. Jesus' teaching is particularly poignant in the light of that essential truth I've been reiterating in this series. Self-sacrificing love is not just one of God's attributes. It is not just one trait among several, one which must be balanced against an equally strong, equally essential need for justice or a fundamental desire to assuage his tarnished honor. No, God is love. It is the single light of his essence, the single fragrance of his being. And all of his actions in the world spring from that oneness of his nature. But how do we reconcile this with the specter of the wicked being tormented day and night forever, as the book of Revelation says in chapter 20, verse 10? The eternal fire of punishment is, after all, prepared by God for the devil and for the wicked, as we heard before in Matthew 25, verse 41. To those raised on Augustinian theology, it certainly sounds as if God has established a place where he will forever actively inflict pain upon the unrepentant. Unlike the chastisement God brings upon us in this life for our spiritual correction, this affliction of the wicked in eternity appears to them to be just pure retribution. As we heard Augustine say, God will do this so that everyone, including the righteous, will never forget what we all deserve for dishonoring God. However, as I've said before, the Eastern Church does not share this understanding of God in hell. Once again, when one holds fast to the truths that, 1, God is love, and 2, that God does not change, one sees the suffering of the wicked in an entirely different light. One recognizes, for instance, that the scriptures never say that God actively punishes the wicked in hell. Jesus just says that the evil go to everlasting punishment. The book of Revelation says that they experience this punishment in a place God has prepared for them. But nowhere does the Bible paint an image of God himself inflicting suffering on the damned. without question. The wicked will experience painful recompense for their God-rejecting actions and unrepentant lives. But in the understanding of the ancient Eastern tradition, that dark reward, that terrible anguish and torment, arises from within the souls of the ungodly themselves. God's part in their punishment is that he does what he always does. He continues to love them. Now, for those raised on Western theologies, I'm sure that's a curious statement. Just how God's love contributes to the suffering of the unrighteous takes some explaining. To do that, let me utilize one of Jesus Christ's parables. It's one I preached on many times as an evangelical pastor, but it wasn't until I became Orthodox that I discovered how much it has to teach about the comparative states of the righteous and the wicked in eternity. I'm talking here about the parable of the prodigal son. If you need to get the story fresh in your mind, it is found in St. Luke's Gospel, chapter 15, verses 11 through 32. Here, I want to focus on the last portion of the parable, the part in which we are introduced to the prodigal son's elder brother. The father's feelings for his two sons and the contrasting attitudes of the brothers toward their father are most instructive. The father in the parable loves each of his sons equally. When the younger son asks for his inheritance, his father gives it to him, as we read in Luke 15, verse 12. He promptly goes off to a distant land and squanders it all on lascivious living. But when the repentant prodigal returns home, his father lavishes him with tenderness, forgiveness, and restoration. The elder son remains faithfully at home, toiling in his father's fields. He is also the recipient of his father's love, affection, and material goods. As the father tells him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours." That's verse 31. But with the return of his broken and repentant sibling, the elder brother's real feelings toward his father surface. Clearly, he resents the love his father has for his wayward brother. And despite the fact that his father has given him everything he needs, the elder brother is bitter that his father hasn't given him what he wants. As he says, "You never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends." Verse 29. So, here we have a father who pours out his loving heart on both of his sons. The repentant one experiences that love as pure joy. He basks in his father's presence, longing to be near to him and to experience the intimacy of his fellowship. For the older brother, however, being in his loving father's presence evokes inner turmoil. Instead of joy, he feels bitter loathing. His father's attempts at intimate communion with him are met with disdain. He recoils from his father's presence, refusing, as the text says, to go in to him. That's verse 28. Now, suppose these two brothers were to find themselves locked in the same room with their father for eternity. For the prodigal, this would be heaven. He would exult in his captivity, ecstatic in the warm, loving embrace of his father. On the other hand, the elder brother would find that pure hell. His forever would be spent evading his father's touch. He'd end up huddling in the corners, hiding his face, perhaps even clawing at the walls in a hopeless attempt at escape. What we have in this imagery is a perfect depiction of the lives of the righteous and of the wicked in eternity. One perfectly loving God. Two very different experiences of that love. But just as with the two brothers and their father, the dissimilarity in how the two groups, the wicked and the righteous, encounter God will have nothing to do with God. The loving, unchanging God will not suddenly put on two separate faces, a scowl of retribution for the unrepentant and a gleaming smile of love for the righteous. No. The qualitative difference between the experiences of the righteous and of the wicked will flow from their own souls, from their own wills, from their own decisions to love God or to hate Him. Nor will God somehow honor the saved with His presence and completely remove Himself from the damned. This is a common idea in Western Christian teaching, that the righteous will be with God while the wicked will be consigned to some place of oblivion where God is not. But this cannot possibly be. What is true in this earthly realm will also be true in the world to come. Throughout eternity, it is God who will sustain the life of both the righteous and the wicked. Moment by moment, He will give the breath of life to all, just as He does now. As we've said before, to believe that God can entirely separate Himself from the unrepentant and cast them off into some place where He is not implies that the unrighteous will suddenly attain to self-existence. But that is a quality of being that belongs only to God. So, in the eternal realm, God will still be purely love. He will remain intimately in the center of our beings, giving life to the righteous and the wicked alike. What will change dramatically, however, is the environment in which we exist. We will find ourselves in the world that the Trinity establishes and inhabits. That world is, first of all, unchanging, and secondly, that world provides no resources for fulfilling our sinful human passions. In this atmosphere, the righteous will find perfect peace. In their earthly life, they struggled hard against sin. Heeding the admonition of St. Paul, they devotedly put to death the deeds of the body. Romans 8, verse 13. Through the power of the indwelling Spirit of God, they quenched the sinful desires that tempt us in this world of death. For them, to find themselves in the eternally unchanging and sinless environment of heaven will be a great relief. To be in the place where sinful longings cannot be fulfilled will be incomprehensible joy, freedom, and bliss. At last, they will be able to focus entirely on loving communion with the Trinity and with all those who have loved Christ more than everything else. The wicked, on the other hand, will find themselves burning with agony from the inside out. They will be consumed by an inner fire so intense that, according to some of the Holy Fathers, it makes the question of whether or not the fires of hell are literal flames to be moot. For no outward suffering will compare with what the unrighteous experience internally. What is the nature of their suffering? We'll consider that next time. For Ancient Faith Radio, this is Matthew Gallatin.
If you'd like more information on Matthew Gallatin's ministry, visit his website at matthewgallatin.com. That's matthewgallatin.com. This has been a listener-supported presentation of Ancient Faith Radio.